say, okay, I'd like to today, this morning, let's continue our study of Halakhat Nerot in the Sukkot, in the fundamentals of Halakhat Nerot. And then, after that, we'll go back and have a little bit of Tanakh shiur in preparation for Tanakh. And then, after that, we'll have a shiur on Kiddush and Havdalah. And that should take us, and then we'll see where we go from there. It's 1 o'clock, then I gotta go. Gotta catch a plane. But, so yesterday I began to talk about the Zmanim, but I wanted to start one step behind that. Okay, we talked about the mitzvah of Halakhat Nerot. Is it part of the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbat? Is it part of the mitzvah of Onan Shabbat? Is it part of the concept of Shalom Bayit, which is what explicitly appears in the Gemara? We'll talk about that later more. But let's go step by step. There is a major league debate between the great Rishonim whether there is a concept of what we call Tosefet Shabbat on Shabbat. Okay, let's go step by step. We heard of the concept of Tosefet Shabbat. You're supposed to add Minachol al HaKodesh at the beginning and at the end of Shabbat. The truth is that it's not so clear that this is a chiyuv. The Gemara explicitly discusses this when it comes to Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is an explicit discussion in the Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah and in other places, where you must add some time from Chol to Kodesh. And the Rambam codifies that halacha l'maaseh, that there's a mitzvah midah min haTorah to include Tosefet Shabbat, Tosefet Yom Kippur. There's a debate exactly what is the nature of that. Lumdish debate. Does it mean that it's a whole new concept? There's Yom Kippur, and then there's Tosefet Yom Kippur. Or do we say conceptually Yom Kippur is stretched? Instead of beginning exactly at Seita Kochavim, we begin Yom Kippur a little bit early. It has some practical nafkaminos, etc. The same question arises with Shabbat. The Ran and many other Rishonim believe that there is a concept of Tosefet Shabbat on every week, every day of the week, every Shabbat, excuse me, that you must add a little bit of time. How much time? Unclear. 2 hours? No. 1 minute? Maybe. Nobody knows. How much you're allowed to add to Shabbat. But there are many Rishonim who say that it is a Yoraita as well. There are other Mishonim who say it's not the right, but it's the Rabbanan. So basically, you have three opinions in the Mishonim. One opinion is the Rambam says there is no concept of Tosefet Shabbat. Zero. There is the position of many Mishonim who say it's the Rabbanan. And there's the position of the Ran and others who say that it's the right. There's a biblical commandment to add to Shabbat. Now, parenthetically, everyone agrees that if, let's say, you did Milacha during Tosefet Shabbat time, you would not be liable for the death penalty. As opposed to if you did Milacha on Shabbat willingly, the Torah said, M'chalel Mokimat. Everyone agrees, when it comes to Tosefet Shabbat, it doesn't have the same status. So, given the fact that most Rishonim therefore conclude that it's either the right or the Rabbanan, it became codified in Jewish law that we are supposed to add a little bit to Shabbat. So the Shulchan Aruch, for example, writes, Yesho Rim, Shitzarich lo sit michol ha-kodesh. There's a mitzvah to be mostly michol ha-kodesh. The question is then, you have to determine when exactly the Shabbos starts. How do you know when Shabbos starts? When is Shabbos? So now, basically, the Gemara, the Rishonim said, well, Shabbat starts. Or, let's put it this way. So Tosefet Shabbat should start whenever we know for sure that Shabbat has started. So 2 minutes before that is Tosefet Shabbat. So when does Shabbat start, according to Halakha? So here, we have to look at two Gemaras. Okay? Take a look at the sources I gave you. The first one, is the Gemara in Shabbat, Daf Lamed Aleph. Okay? The one that doesn't say the daf on it, that cut off on the top. So the Gemara says 4 lines from the top. Tanu Rabbanan. Bein Hashmashot, Safek Min Hayom, Safek Min Halayla. Bein Hashmashot, which we don't know what it is yet, is not day, not night. Meaning, for sure, it is not yet fully night. But at the same time, the day has ended, in a certain sense. It's one of those amorphous times. Safek min hayom umin halayla. Safek kulo min hayom, safek kulo min halayla. Matil li l'oto l'chol ner shnei yamim. So we're matmir in halakha to treat it as a chumrah from both days. Meaning, so for example, if the chumrah is, let's say, Shabbos, well, you shouldn't be doing work during that time, because maybe it's already Shabbos to start. On the other hand, if it's Saturday night, well, you shouldn't make Matzah, because maybe it's still Shabbos. So, you're machmir on both ends. You're machmir Friday night, and you're machmir Saturday night. Very nice. The Ezeh Uben Hashmashot. When exactly is this period of time of Ben Hashmashot that we're not yet sure, has the new day begun? Has the old day ended? So, Gemara has a number of opinions. So, Gemara says, Mishetishka Hama, once the sun is set, Kol Zman Shepnei Mizrach Ma'adini, as long as the eastern horizon is still red. However, once Yichsit HaTachton, if the lower part of the horizon has started to get dark, the low Yichsit HaElyon, Bein HaShemashot, it's still Bein HaShemashot. Yichsit HaElyon, V'Yishvel HaTachton, Zehu Laila Dibrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda gives an astronomical determination, not a time determination. You got to go out with your eyes every night, depending on where you live in the world. If you live in Toronto, it's one thing. If you live in Calgary, it's another thing. If you live in Yerushalayim, it's another thing. You simply got to go out and look every night. And there's no objective standard. Rav Nechemya Omer, Rav Nechemya gives a different sheet. Kidei shehalech adam mishtishkeach hamach hatzimil. From the time of sunset that it takes for a normal human being to walk half a Roman mile. A Roman mile is about 4,000 feet. So 2,000 feet. How long does it take a normal person to walk 2,000 feet? I don't know. How long? What's 2,000 feet? 3,000 feet. How long is a basketball court? A basketball court? Oh, you only know kilometers? What's it? You don't use foot? You use feet. No? Meters. 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 Okay, how much is 2,000 feet? Let's say a basketball court is 100 feet. 650 meters. So how long does it take to walk? Less than 10 minutes. Very short. That's the position of Rabbi Chaim. Rabbi Yossi Omer. No. Rabbi Yossi says an almost impossible shita to apply. Ben Hashmashot Keharef Ayin. It's not the share of mine, it's like a blink of an eye. Meaning, let's say shtiyah is at 4:30. What we call shtiyah is at 4:30. It's still day till 4:38. At 4:40 or 4:39 and a half, night starts. And that half second, half minute, that's Ben Hashmashos. Wow. Can you imagine if we pass in that sheet? That'd be very difficult. So Rabbi Yossi says, terrifying. Zeh nichnas zeh yotzei, ve'i'afshar la'amod alav. This is the position of Rabbi Yossi. Skip about 10 lines. The Gemara continues. And the Gemara tries to define the astronomical sheet as well, because it's not very practical. To tell everybody, you're a shul, it's okay, now let's go have a party outside and determine every night how it works. So the Gemara, if you go down, you see what it says, Ezu ben Hashmashot. Ezu ben Hashmashot, Mishitishka Tama, Kozman, Shri, Mishrach, Matim, Mishrach, Tiltah, Lay Sahel, etc., etc. So the Gemara says, Amar Yudam, Shmohaki Tan, Mishitishka Tama, Kozman, Shri, Mishrach, Matim, Yom. As long as it is still red over there in the horizon, it's still fully day. Jer se pojavio, it should look top, so it becomes both the day, the top and the bottom of the horizon are dark, then it's light. The us do the tame, the itma, they follow the position. Shir bin Ashmashos Bikama, Amar Rava, Amar Yil Rashmul, Shlosha Kel Gabriel, three parts of the meal. So the Mar says, what does it mean three parts of the meal? My people Kel Gabriel. Ilay Matzlatza, Pal Gabriel, does it mean three halves of the meal, which would be a meal and a half? Three halves, three over two, a fraction. Mar says, so why don't you just say, name a meal and a half? Why don't you just say, a meal and a half? What are you talking about? Ella, the Mar concludes, Ella, plus a meal. Three thirds of a meal, name a meal. Three thirds. Three thirds is a third, is a whole. Three times one is three. One third is a whole meal. Ella, the Gemara says, Tlasa ribe mila. Three quarters of a meal. Three quarters of a Roman mile. The time that it takes to walk three quarters of a Roman mile, that is the amount of Bein HaShemashot. So let's say if it takes about 20 minutes, 22 minutes, 23 minutes, 24, depending on the different shita, to walk the Roman mile. So then, three quarters of that, 18 minutes. Interesting, where we get the 18 minutes starts to arise here. If 24 is the standard shita that most Rishonim take, so three quarters of a meal is. Am I right? Am I wrong? Yeah, right. So three quarters of a meal is 18 minutes. This is the position of the Gemara and Shabbos. That Bein HaShemashot is three quarters of a meal. Shkia to Tzeit is about 18 minutes. Now turn to the Gemara in Sof and Daf Daf. Okay. In a totally different sugya, the Gemara discusses the time from Shkiat HaChama to Tzeit HaKochavim. Totally different sugya. And the Gemara, if you see the Tosfot, Divrei HaMatchil Kol HaYishuv. Divrei HaMatchil Kol HaYishuv. Parallel to that, look in the sugya. The Gemara says, two lines up. Take kama mahalech adam beinoni beyom. How much can an average person walk in a day? As etzer parsaot, 10 parsecs. Umealok ha-shachar ad ne'kakama arba milim. From alok ha-shachar, from dawn until sunrise, it's 4 mil. Mishkiat ha-kama va'atzeit ha-kochavim arba'at milim. It's also a 4 mil. What? What are you talking about? This Gemara says it's a frontal contradiction between the sugya in Shabbos and the sugya in Safa. The sugya in Shabbos says Bein HaShemashot is 3 quarters of a meal. The sugya in Safa says explicitly that from Shkiat HaChama to Tzeit HaKochavim it is 4 meals. And if a meal is 24 minutes, 4 times 24 is 96 minutes. That is a big gap. That is a contradiction to end all contradictions. Is the time between sunset and darkness 18 minutes or is it 96 minutes? What do you do with such a seer? Especially since it impacts on, it's also a practical issue. Matzias. It's not like some sort of lumdish machlokes. It's a Matzias question. You go out and you see, is it dark? Is it not dark? So what's going on here? So basically, there were two approaches here. One extremely radical, but it's so interesting because what we think is radical was actually adopted by the Shulchan Aruch. Last night somebody was talking about it. We always follow Shulchan Aruch. It's so interesting. On a major issue like this, we don't follow Shulchan Aruch. We always say, oh, we follow Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch. We bow down to the Shulchan Aruch. It's not true. There are many major issues where we don't follow Shulchan Aruch. This is an example. How do you resolve this conflict? So So already early in the history of Halacha, Rabbeinu Tam gave a tremendous radical answer, and that's where the business of Rabbeinu Tam's Shira comes from. From this Sira, look at the little post over here, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shira Tachamah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Koshel Rabbeinu Tam, Dibsof, Bame Madlikin, at the end of the Sugya in Shabbos, Amar, Ezu Ben Ashmashot, Mishitish Tachamah, called Mashak name is Rahmat Ibn, Tirei Rabbi Yehuda. Umaski Hatam, and the Gemara concludes there, the Beit HaShemashot, the Rabbi Yehuda, Tlata Rimei Nil, three quarters of a meal. The Hapakam, Rabbi Yehuda, Gufei Nil, Rabbi Yehuda himself says, Arpa Mili. You can't get around it. Total stereo. Yesh Lomar, the Hapakam, Mitchilat Shkia, the Hainu Mishaa, Shem Mitchilat Kachama, Mitanes, the Ovi Harakia, Ad Halayla, So Rabbeinu Tam introduces into the halachic discussion a radically new concept of two shkiyot. That there really are two sunsets. But there's the sunset that we see astronomically, what we call sunset, when the sun goes below the horizon. But halachically it's still day. And it's still day for another 3 1/4 milin, for another 72 minutes. 3 milin is 3 times 24. That's 72 minutes, maybe a little bit more, a little less. For another 72, 75 minutes. And what the Sukkah in Shabbat is talking about is the last stage. That last 3/4 of a meal, that's from what he calls the second Shkia. When the sun, again, I don't know exactly how they understood the astronomy, whether they understood that somehow the sun is totally away, we'll use very simplistic baby terms, totally away, and now, at that moment, Bein HaShemashot begins. According to Rabbeinu Tam, and that's why you see Hasidim sometimes davening, half an hour after it's dark already, after Shkia. Yeah, I have a shtiebel in my neighborhood. It's crazy. They start davening mincha. Shkia is at 4:30. They start davening mincha at 5:10. Mincha. That's what they do. Because they follow Rabbeinu Tam. And if Rabbeinu Tam said, and if you really take Rabbeinu Tam to the nth degree, you can do malacha on Erev Shabbos until 70 minutes after what we call Shia, technically, if you follow him consistently. Or let's say you're caught in a terrible bind, you're somewhere in the middle of a bad neighborhood and you're stuck and you have to keep moving. Some people say, you rely on Rabbeinu Tam. If you're stuck, you have nothing else to do. That's Rabbeinu Tam. Many other Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. Many other Rishonim say, first of all, look carefully. The Gemara is using two different terminologies in the Sugya. Notice carefully, the Sugya of Sakhid is talking, uses the term Mishkiya Tachama Ad Tzeisak Rechavim. Tzeisak Rechavim here doesn't mean what we call Tzeisak Rechavim. Notice the Gemara of Sakhid never uses the word Bein HaShemashos. Only the Sugya in Shabbos uses the term Bein HaShemashos. It's two totally different issues. The Sugya Sakhin says the Vilna Gaon and many others showing the Rambam and others before is talking about when it gets fully dark. So that may take sometimes an hour or more, depending on where you live in the world. But fundamentally, what the Sugya is talking about in Shabbos is Shkia and Tzeisak Rechavim, what we call Tzeisak Rechavim, the three middle stars. And that's 18 to 20 minutes. Why is it 18 to 20 minutes? Because the Gemara says the Vilna Gaon. The Gemara is talking about in Mesopotamia, in Babylon, in Iraq, in Eretz Israel. Everybody here, I think, knows, if you've ever been to Israel, did you notice that it gets darker faster in Israel than it gets in Toronto or in New York City? Even in the summer. In the summer in New York, it takes maybe sometimes 55 minutes for it to get dark. But in the winter, it takes a half an hour. In Israel, it takes about 18 minutes between Mincha and Maariv because of the latitude and longitude, just the way the world is set up. And so the Gemara says, all the Gemara in Shabbos is the Gemara that should be taken in the Halakha, but it has to be adjusted depending on where you are in the world. If you're in Israel, then it is three quarters of a meal, because that simply was the reality. But in Poland, or in Russia, or in the United States, it has to be adjusted for the reality of Hirsipa Elyon, Hirsipa Tachton. You have to look at astronomically how it happens. And that's what they come up with, 42 minutes, you know, 42 minutes after Shkia, 48 minutes after Shkia, all the count, because it's all based on where you are in the world. Now, given this background, we now can talk about Tosefta Shabbos more intensely, which will then lead us to talk about Halakha's names. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yesham Yuchet Tzarech Losif Michol HaLakodesh Uzman Tosefta. So now that we have to determine when Shabbos could possibly start, we can now talk about Tosefta Shabbos. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, if I woke you at 3 o'clock in the morning, I ask you, when is the time of Tosefta? According to Rabbeinu Tam, when can you do Tosefta? What? When can you do Tosefta? According to Rabbeinu Tam. I'll give you times. Shkia, astronomical Shkia, is at 4:30. Okay? What we call Shkia is at 4:30. What Rabbeinu Tam calls the second Shkia is at 5:40. And what Rabbeinu Tam calls Tzeitzak Bechavim is going to be at 6 o'clock. So when do you do Tosefet Shabbat according to Rabbeinu Tam?
Yeah, by 10.
Exactly!
Well,
according to Rabbeinu Tam, from 4:30 to 5:40 is still day. That's the time of Tosefet. You want to do it at 4, do it at 4. You want to do it at 5, do it at 5. Any time until 5:40, it's dark, it's pitch dark. You can still be, you can have your iPod and your Schmeipod, you can have everything on in your house. According to Rabbeinu Tam. That's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch passed. That's what I mean by we don't call the Shulchan Aruch. Uzman Tosefet hu mitchilat hashkia. Tosefet would go from the second Shkia, she'ein hashemesh nireit al haaretz ad zman beyash mashal. I'm sorry, from the first Shkia. All that is Tosefet. So if you want to add 5 minutes, fine, it's not a half an hour, but technically it's still day. V'hazman shehu shlosham milin u'reviyah. 3 1/4 meaning. Ratala sotakulo Tosefet. If you want to make that entire hour and a quarter Tosefet osa. Ratala sot menu mitzat osa. Ubilvat shirosi ezezman shevadayo michol alakodesh. That is the position of the Shulchan Aruch. According to the Shulchan Aruch, on the calendar is at 4:30. You can be doing work. You can be listening to your CDs, you can be watching TV until 5 o'clock, 5:30. Take 5 minutes before 5:40, you say, L'chadoybi, L'chaskala, I'm a Kala Shabbos, and I fulfill Tosefet Shabbos. That's the position of Rabbeinu Tam and the Shulchan Aruch. Many Rishonim disagree. Many Rishonim say, no. We don't follow that. We follow the position of the Grubs. We follow the position of the Grub. And we say, no. We follow, as the Mishnah Berurah says, the Harbi Posnim Cholkim Al Zeh, on the Shulchan Aruch. The Svir Lo Demiyad Shani Kaseha Kamam Einenu. The minute that we don't see the sun anymore on the horizon, what we call astronomical sunset, Hu Bein Hashmashotu Safek Yom Safek Laila. And so, according to that approach, Tosefet has to come before astronomical Shkia. So Shkia is at 4:30, so we have to have Tosefet at 4:28. or 4:30 or 4:25. Not at 5 o'clock when it's something yom, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, it's probably, according to the Grah, probably already real Shabbos. So, Tosefta Shabbos has to come before Bein HaShemashot. But there's a tremendous debate, when is Bein HaShemashot? Now, let's continue one step further and apply this issue to Hadlakat Neirot. When should we be doing Hadlakat Neirot? So, let's get into another debate of the Rishon. Remember, in the time of the Gemara, there was no such thing as Kabbalah Shabbos, the way we have it today. Kabbalah Shabbat with the 60s Morim and Lechad Dodi and these Moshir is an invention of the Kabbalists, right? In Tzfat in the 1600s, in the Chug of the Ari HaKadosh. That's the thing. For them, in the time of the Gemara, the Davin Mincha, they sat around, they talked, they learned, whatever they did. And then when the Chazan got up and said, Baruch, that's when Shabbos started. That was Kabbalah Shabbos. Maybe they said Baruch a little early, I don't know. What about Hadlakat Neirot? So here there's an interesting issue that arose. The most Rishonim Paskin, Hadlakat Neirot is a mitzvah. We talked about it yesterday, what's the source of it? It's a rabbinic mitzvah. Only Shabbos, Kabbalah Shabbos, only Shabbos. But it's a mitzvah, it's like eating matzah, like taking lulav. It has no impact on Shabbos. It's a mitzvah, which you're supposed to do before Shabbos. Because on Shabbos, you can't do it because it's a shemalah. So before Shabbos, you have to make sure you have a lot of lit candles. But if not, then somehow, Hadlakas Neiros somehow begins Shabbos. The Baha'i, the Baal HaLachot Golot, one of the last of the Gaonim, on the cusp of Gaonim Rishonim, the Baal HaLachot Golot introduced into the halachic history the following svar. Since Hadlakat Neirot is the last thing that is done prior to Shabbos, it's the last melacha that you do. When you're in the Kabbal shop, when you light candles, you are in effect being the Kabbal Shabbos. It is an assumed Kabbalah Shabbat. And so, according to the Baha, whether you're a boy or a girl, a man or a woman, when you light candles, you are implicitly being the Kabbal Shabbos. That's the position of the Baha. Did not exist in halachic history until the Baha, until the late 900s, early 1000s. And it's quoted by the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, in Siman Reish Samach Gimel, Lebal Halachot Gdolot. It's interesting, usually the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote who he's quoting, it's a code. This is one of the few times in the Shulchan Aruch where he actually cites who is the author of this Shita. Lebal Halachot Gdolot is a Siman Reish Samach Gimel Seif Yud in the Shulchan Aruch. Lebal Halachot Gdolot Kevim Sheiglit Ner Shul Shabbat Chal Allah Shabbat V'ne'etzar Bimlacha. You are forbidden to do work. Now, since that's what you do, you want to make sure that you light candles. If you take that position seriously, you want to make sure that you light candles during the time of Tosefta Shabbos. Because if you're going to be Mekabel Shabbos, you want to fulfill at the same time the aspect of Tosefta Shabbos. Okay? Now, since we do not generally pass them for any time, we pass them like the Grah. That's the way most communities follow, unless you're super Hasidish. And even the Hasidim today, are actually, they're not makers like Rabbeinu Tam, they're not makers like Rabbeinu Tam, and Shabbos. Meaning, there are Hasidim who will, they won't do work after Shkia, but they'll keep Shabbos till Rabbeinu Tam's tzeis, 96 minutes after. So they'll daven mincha late, but during the week, but on Shabbos, they won't make it
at a certain point in history, there were Hasidim who were made in the 17 and 1800s, following Rabbi Natan and other Jews who followed that. But at a certain point in time, even the Hasidic Shapovsky said, you're playing with fire, you're playing with Isra Malacha, so better to be Machmir, like the Gra, not to do work after Shkia, but be Machmir, not to do work on any side of Shabbos until 96. There was also briskers who followed that. There was Talbachik, for example. In Boston, he was Machmir for that, for himself, not for others, but for himself. So he was waiting around after the Goblin Mariah, they said Abdullah, and he would sit and learn in Maimonides when he was older, and he couldn't walk home. Just sit and learn and wait until it was 96 minutes, and then someone would drive him home. That was just the way he did it. Okay. So, this is what we have. So, theoretically, according to this, we should do Habakkuk Neros 2 minutes before Shabbos, which is what sometimes ends up happening. People miss, quote unquote, the 18 minutes, like in my house. We have 3 little boys, 5, 3. 18 months, it is sometimes very hard to plan exactly that you're going to get there on time. So, in general, ostensibly, you should only, as long as you lit candles before Shkia, and if you take Bahat seriously, so your Mekabel Shabbos is finished. There's one more knage, one more wrinkle that entered into the system at a certain point in the 17 or 1800s. I'm not sure when it happened. And that is, there was one other Shita in the mix. And that's Rabbi Elazar Metz. I mentioned him yesterday, the Urayim. The Urayim has a very interesting sheet. The Urayim disagrees with all of these Rishonim. Urayim says, no. The 3/4 of a meal is not referring to after Shkia, literally, but it also is referring to the time that we associate with before Shkia. The 3/4 of a meal, based on certain readings, I'm not going into detail, he believes is really from 18 minutes before Shkia. 18 minutes before Shkia, a person should really stop doing work. That's the position of Rabbi Elazar Metz. Now, Rabbi Elazar Metz was not accepted, la'alacha. We all do work until 1 minute before Shkia, or Shkia itself. But it became instituted for Hadlakas Neros. Since Hadlakas Neros became the time, we'll talk about it, especially for women, for Kabbalat Shabbat, that therefore we should try to do Hadlakat Neros 18 minutes before Shkia. So the 18 minutes is the 3/4 of a meal mentioned in the Gemara in Shabbos. Through the prism of Rabbi Elazar Metz, who understood that it's referring to prior to what we call Shkia. That was his position. Very, very radical position, not accepted, but for the purpose of Hadlakat Neros, they said, let's be Machmir, the position of Rabbi Elazar Metz. Now, this then was mitgalgel, that since women were mostly doing Hadlakat Neros, so the Shulchan Aruch says, Ba'al pi zeh no'agot tzat nashim, sha'achar shebirchu v'hidliku ha'nerot, mashlichot la'aret ha'ptila shebiyadan, shidiku ba ve'ein mechabot ota. That's where the custom many women have, to drop the match. Because if, in fact, Hadlakas Neros is Kabbalah Shabbos, so you can't blow out the match, because now you're Mechaber. So therefore, the custom arose that women would drop the match in order to avoid that problem. But the Shulchan Aruch mentions, V'yesh omrim shi matzna kodim shi mablika, she'ina mekabel Shabbat, mo'il. There are those who say, since this whole thing is only the Baal HaLachot, if a woman wants to make a condition, I'm not being mekabel Shabbos, then she can do that. What we call anti-kavanah. I'm not being mekabel Shabbos. And many poskim say, not only can she do it b'peh, but even b'alev, since the whole thing is a chumrah. Even though in general we say conditions have to be verbalized, you have it in mind, it's enough. And therefore many people follow that if they have a pressing need, they will make a tenach. Now, what's a pressing need? So many of the posts will say, well, pressing need is pressing need. Like, you need, your family's going to a kota for Shabbos. So a number of the posts will say, you can light candles and get into your car and go to the kota. You still have, you know, especially if you're still saying you lit candles an hour before in Yerushalayim. You can still go to the kotel in a taxi or in your car. If you have in mind, it's not going to be the shots. And certainly, men who are not lighting candles usually, unless they're in their dorm or by themselves, they certainly never were in the shots when the wife lights. And so it's very common that, you know, the wife will light, and then the husband is still doing, you know, malacha or work in the house and driving the shul. In fact, there's a very interesting little tshuva in Igros Moshe, where Moshe Feinstein, it's amazing, but Moshe Feinstein in the 50s, somebody wrote to him, gave him a mussar. I saw you in a car 5 minutes before Shkia after Hadlakas neighbor. And I gave him a mussar. It's a simple Jew. I don't understand it. It was after I love his neighbor. The guy thought it. It says, I love his neighbor's time, Shabbos starts. So Rav Moshe writes back to him, says, no, you don't understand that really you're allowed to do work after I love his neighbor, so as long as you, you know, especially if you had in mind, and I didn't like it. But he says, but I appreciate your concern that some people won't understand, and therefore from now on I take on myself a neder, a Kabbalah, that I will never do malacha after I love his neighbor's time. Ramosha writes from then on, and then he started to take that Kabbalah upon himself. So you have this business of Kabbalah Shabbos. As I mentioned to you, you can get out of it by Ahadlaka. Again, many folks don't even hold for it. The Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh Omrim, and the Rama writes, Ahaminhag, Shota Isha Hamadleket, Mikabel Shabbat Hadlaka. The Ashkenazi minhag is that we accept the Bahara for women. In lo shetatnet tchila, unless she makes a condition. And here, tnai balev sarvi, even in the heart is enough. But the rest of the house, the rest of the people in the house are mutter until the community is mikabel Shabbos. So this is a very interesting issue. It also has ramifications for another issue that I'm sure many of you are aware of, and that is the bracha. I mentioned yesterday that there's machlokes where we make the bracha, not the chatan. Yeah? Some rishonim say no, some rishonim say yes. We eventually paskin yes, that we do make a bracha like all other mitzvot midrabanan. Okay? Very nice. When do you make the bracha? When do you make the bracha? Do you make it after? But when do we generally make brachot on mitzvot? Before. What's that concept called? Over lafiyatan. Sukim Sahim Dakalit. The Gemara says explicitly that you must make a bracha over lafiyatan before. Right? That's the problem with the lulul. Yes, so we have that anti kavana, we turn it over so that we're not yoked in the mitzvah yet, right? The whole business. So, Mapito, what do you do with Neir Shabbos? Because you have a dilemma. If you in fact accept the Bahag that says that Kabbalah Shabbos, it starts with Hadlakas Ner, then you're in a little bit of a plunder. You're a little bit of a problem. Because if you make the bracha, and that is Kabbalat Shabbat, then how can you light candles? On the other hand, what about Over L'Asiyatan? So the famous compromise is the close the eyes, do this business. It's not because of some mumbo jumbo. It's not hocus pocus. It's an attempt to solve a halachic problem. And the halachic problem is, how on the one hand do you have Over L'Asiyatan, and on the other hand, how do you have Kabbalah Shabbos without violent Shabbos? So basically what women do, many women do, Ashkenazi women do, is they light the candles without making a bracha. So it's not yet Shabbos. So they haven't made a bracha. Then they close their eyes, but they go like this.
covered a wife,
in order that they don't get hana'ah from the light, and then they make the bracha, then they open their eyes. It's like the lulav business. It's like turning it over, so we're not yoking the mitzvah yet. That is where that business comes from. It's in order to solve the halakhic problem that's created by, number one, assuming like the Baha'i, and number two, the Wallahim wanting to have Ober Lasiyatam. But now I want to mention something fascinating, especially for the women. This is one of the most interesting things in halakhic history. What started to happen is once women start to do this, they start to do this also on young people. And one of the most interesting things is that the wife of the Taz is one of the commentators on Shulchan Aruch. So Marath Bela. So Marath Bela was an Isha Chachama. She was a very, very learned woman, a very pious woman. And she's quoted in the Hakdama of the children of the Taz to, I think it's maybe Yoredeya. I think it's Yoredeya. Where they talk about their father, and then they have a whole 2 pages about their mother. They talk about how pious their mother was. They talk about how she used to fast a lot and daven a lot into this, and how she knew a lot of halacha. And they talk about the halacha that she introduced into the system. And from then on, it's quoted in her name. It's one of the few places where women actually are part and parcel of halachic debate and discussion. Maraz Beit, it's quoted in the introduction of the Taz to Yoredeya, and where she said that she saw the women in her community were lighting candles and then making the bracha on Yom Tov as well, for Yom Tov candles. And she said to them, oh, that's wrong. Because on Yom Tov, you're allowed to, from an existing fire, you're allowed to light candles. As long as you, when you turn on the match, Erev Yom Tov, right? So you turn on the match, that's mutter. You're going to light the candle, who cares if it's Yom Tov? By Yom Tov, you're allowed to transfer from one plate to another. So she said, on Yom Tov, you're making a mistake. On Yom Tov, you should go back to the original principle of Ober Lasiyatan. The bracha should be made before, and then you light the candles. And this is one of those examples. This is one of the few places that women's voice is heard in the halakhic discussion, and it's quoted by Allah and brought down from then on by the subsequent posthumous. I mean, not wrong, and others. Okay. Let's say a couple of more things about Avakas Neros, and then we'll have Harusa related to Shabbat Tanakh. Okay. Where did the two candles come from? Does it say that in the Gemara? The Gemara what?
No.
You heard it, right? The truth is, the Gemara says nothing about 2 candles, or 3 candles, or 4 candles, or 10 candles. In fact, the Gemara, if you read the Gemara Keshuta, the Gemara just says you light candles. Is it 1 candle, 10 candles? Totally not discussed. Probably because you lit as many candles as you needed. Especially if it's shown by it. And that's what the Gemara discusses. You lit the candles. I'm sorry?
So maybe essentially you add 1 to each child or something.
Maybe. Right. And more body. If you say, but again, shalom bayis in the original meaning of the sugya doesn't mean your house. It means that people shouldn't trip over each other.
Right, so more people need more light.
More people need more light. Oh, you say like that. Okay, maybe. That's very nice. So basically, there doesn't seem to be any hakadah in the Gemara about 2. Where did 2 come from? And here I want to throw out a theory that is a little bit radical, but I think it's correct historically. This is one of those examples of the nexus between halakha and history. And it's based on a very famous essay by Professor Yisrael Toshma from Lubrach, who died this year. He's a great historian of halakha, lived in Israel. He was a big Talmud Chacham as well as a big scholar. He lived in Mahavir. You could see him going to shul every day. Big, very big Talmud Chacham and scholar. And so he notes the following. the following phenomenon. If you look again, the sugya, doesn't say anything about two, doesn't say anything about three, doesn't say anything about anything. If you look in the early Rishonim also, there's no discussion, there's no mention of numbers. What you start to find, and in addition to that, Professor Tashman notes, as I mentioned to you yesterday, the sugya never said anything about explicitly that somehow Neros Shabbos are connected to Kavod or are connected to Oneg in the way that we use it, related to the Seuda. It just doesn't say it. The first people to introduce specifically the concepts of Kavod and Oneg into the sugya are Rashi and Tosfos. We saw yesterday. Rashi is the first one in Ashkenaz who starts to discuss Neros Shabbos is somehow related to Kavod rather than to Shalom Bayit. Tosfos is the first one who explicitly talks about it being Oneg and therefore it should be at the Seuda. It gives it a greater Oneg. All of a sudden, Professor Toshima points out some very strange things happened in Ashkenaz. Rashi Tosfos, Ashkenaz, right? It's Germany and France. Jews didn't live in Germany and France before. Right? They started to come to Germany and France in the late 900s, early 1000s. That's the reality of the migration, right? And I don't know if you've studied a little bit of Jewish history, but how did Jews end up in Europe? Where did they come from? Were they just fell from the moon? Nope. Nobody's kicked out yet. Yeah, you're right. After, you know, there were expulsions later on, in the 1100s and the 1200s, but how did Jews who lived in Eretz Israel and in Babylonia, how did they end up in places like England, France, and Germany? I mean, it's time. They just decided to go on vacation and stay. I mean, what happened? Yes.
As the empires that took over Israel expanded, they moved throughout their empires. Like Rome, for instance, stretched out as far as England, I believe.
Correct.
Which opened up that whole field.
That's true. But if you look carefully at the historical documents, one would have then expected that there should have been a thriving Jewish community in Ashkenaz in 400 and 500 at the height of the Roman Empire. And there isn't. The Jewish community in Ashkenaz starts in 900, you know, 400 or 500 years after the fall of the Roman Empire. So it would have been a nice theory, but Lamaisa, that's not what happens. There's no Jewish community in England in 400. There's Jewish community in Sura and Pompidita and Ardal. And Babel and Eretz Yisrael. Babel, Eretz Yisrael, Babel, Eretz Yisrael, Babel, Eretz Yisrael. That's all you have. So, again, we don't know exactly what happened, but it seems that at a certain point, the community in Eretz Yisrael started to decline for all kinds of economic, social, political reasons. Why do neighborhoods change? You know, who knows exactly? And what you find is in the 900s, Jews from Eretz Yisrael, merchants and rabbis, start to immigrate. Now, where's the most logical place that you're going to emigrate from if you're living in Eretz Israel, if the conditions are bad? Where's the closest place to go? Well, the closest places to go by boat are?
Europe, probably.
Oh, wait, which part of Europe?
Italy.
Italy, exactly. The first indications of Jewish settlement in Europe were in Italy. Italy is very close to Israel, to Palestine. The first places are Italy and North Africa, Tripoli, all those places around the Mediterranean, which had access, Egypt, North Africa, Italy. And so by the year 1000, you find already communities flourishing in places like Caroline, which is in North Africa, in places in Italy, etc. From Italy, they start to expand up into Europe. So by the mid-1000s, you find communities in isolated places in Germany and in France. And by the late-1000s, it's very, very dominant, until the destruction of the Rhineland communities in the First Crusade. So Jews, who had never lived in places like Europe, all of a sudden find themselves in places like Europe. Not only that, they go to Germany and northern Germany and northern France. The more north you get, the more clearly, it's clearly a very different climate and a very different astronomical reality than in Eretz Israel. If you've ever been, I know you've ever traveled, if you've ever been, let's say, to places like northern Germany or Finland or northern England in the summer, did you ever notice? When does it get dark there in the summer? Really late. Have you ever traveled? Nope. Only Toronto. Never left Toronto? Months ago. Okay. I'm not talking about Toronto. I'm talking about, you know. So if you go to places like England in the summer, you could be chaloshing. Shabbos will be over at 10:30 at night. I once traveled to Alaska in the summer. It was unbelievable. It was great. I mean, you get Friday, but you know, we went to the middle when I was still single. So every summer, a couple of friends of ours, we used to go on a trip. just to go on a trip together. And we used to go to crazy places. So we went one summer to Alaska, and we were in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of summer. And it, like, you know, Shabbos came in at 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, basically, we start Shabbos early, at 9:30 at night. You know, and you know, you, and then you, you know, Saturday night, you could go to sleep and make Abdullah Sunday morning because it didn't pay to stay up that late. We made Abdullah in the morning when we went, before we went hiking. That's what we did. So that in northern parts of Europe in the summer, it can get that way. Obviously, not as crazy as 11 o'clock at night, but Shabbos could start at 9 o'clock at night. And so all of a sudden, the Jewish communities that start to flourish in Europe were faced with all kinds of new halakhic issues that the Jews, that the Gemara never faced. So for example, while in the time of the Gemara, it was very easy to daven Mincha Ma'ariv. You daven Mincha and Ma'ariv on time, because Mincha was, at, you know, let's say in the average, you know, in the summer was even at 7 o'clock. You waited around 10, 15 minutes, then you daven Ma'ariv. That was the custom like today you do. In Europe, in the summer, people didn't go to sleep at 10 o'clock at night like today. What do you do? So they started davening Ma'ariv early. And therefore you find the Rishonim discussing the whole question of how early can you daven Ma'ariv? The first question is in Brachos. It only occurs in Ashkenaz. Because in Ashkenaz it's a reality. The Truman Sadeshin, one of the great Rishonim of Ashkenaz, has a very famous tshuva, the very beginning of the Sefer, where he talks about what is it, Friday night, we have a problem. Because can we daven early? How early can we daven? Because, and he says, I remember growing up when I used to see the great Rabbanim, they would make Shabbos, eat the meal, and they still had enough time to take a stroll on the Rhine, and it was still sunlight. Like we do in the summer. Do they make early Shabbos in Toronto? Yeah. And it could sometimes be so early that you finish your meal and it's still daylight outside. So, this was the dilemma that they were facing. And all of a sudden, you start to find tshuvas in the Rishonim, like the Rav Yah and the Or Zeruah, all the great Ashkenazic Rishonim, questions that had never been asked before, like, it's hot in the summer in Ashkenaz. So they start to eat outside. And they ask, okay, it's very nice to eat outside. Can you light the Shabbos candles outside even though they don't do anything? Because if you're outside and it's 7 o'clock at night and it's sunny, what's the point of lighting a candle? As the Gemara says, Shraga Batira Mahani. What do I need a Shraga? What do I need a light? At the sun. And all of a sudden, we start to find other Rishonim ask questions like, well, should I light candles at home when it's also sunny? All the sunlight is coming in. What's the point? Again, if you assume it's Shalom Bayis, what Shalom Bayis is necessary? It's light outside. No one's going to trip over anybody. And so you start to find the Rishonim saying, well, Yes, it's true. It's light. Yes, it's true for Shalom Bayis purposes. You don't really need it. But for Kavod, it adds a dimension of Kavod to have a special candle for Shabbos, which is what we do today. We all have electricity in our house. But fundamentally, what happens in the Tkufas HaRishonim is that Shabbos candles become transformed from the candles of light, of practical light, to the candles of ritual, which is exactly the way they are for us today. They become halakhically transformed in the conception of the Ashkenazic Rishonim. That yes, it's true that they don't, they're not really necessary for Shalom Bayis, but they are Neros Shel Kavod. They add Kavod to the Shabbos. They add Oneg, maybe even, a little bit of Oneg. Even if you have light, you have a special candle at the table, it adds a certain simcha to the meal. And so you have a total transformation of the Neros Shabbos in the thinking of the Rishonim from what seems to emerge from the Pashtus of the Sugya in Shabbos. He says Tashma the following radical suggestion. He suggests, basically what happens is that Neros Shabbos become very much like Neros Hanukkah. They've turned into ritual candles that are not used for light, but are used to represent something. And so Tashma claims, this is his chiddush. Can't prove it, it's his chiddush. But Tashma says that's where the two candles came from. Because what happens is, that's very nice, but what happens in winter? In winter, now you're lighting a candle, in the consciousness of the Jew, what's going on here? You're using the Shabbos candle for light? It's a mitzvah candle! You shouldn't be using it! So what happened? They decided to light another candle as a Shamas. Like we do with Chanan Neros Hanukkah. A very ingenious suggestion. They started to light Hanukkah, like a Hanukkah candle. You have a Shamas. You have another light. Because you have one light which is for Shabbos, for the mitzvah, and you have another light which is there just to provide light for you. And so Tashma claims that was the origin of the two. After the fact, like many things in life, after the fact, we then added, many later Rishonim started to add new meaning to it, like we do to all kinds of things. Another layer of meaning to this beautiful mitzvah of Neros Shabbos, and they said, it's Keneged Zachar V'Shamor, it's Keneged this, it's Keneged that. But fundamentally, it was rooted in a certain historical reality. As I said, the big chiddush, you can take it, you can leave it. If you want to, you can read about it in this book called Minhag Ashkenaz HaKadmo, wonderful book, which deals with a number of the important issues of Minhag Ashkenaz, the early Minhag Ashkenaz between 1000 and 1200, where you start to see a lot of the minhagim that we know and love in Ashkenaz developed. Okay, let's stop here. Okay, Chavrusa time. I'd like you to prepare the following. Everybody jot down with their Tanakh. Does everybody brought their Tanakh today? So, if not, they'll share. They're short, I'm sure there's a space membership or a little base membership. Okay, so please prepare the following. Please read through the second half of Yishayahu Perak Nunchet. Notice what aspects of Shabbat are mentioned there that it's important to keep. Then, Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu Perak Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Yud Tet until Pasuk Chazayin. Again, notice what aspects of Shabbat the Navi is stressing here. Then Yechezkel Perek Chaf. Yechezkel Perek Chaf Yud Zayin. Yechezkel Perek Chaf. Zip through it from the beginning until Pasuk Chavav, Zifruit, Alfu Chavav, and then Nehemiah, Perak Yud Gimel, Nehemiah, Perak Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalit, until Pasuk Chav Gimel. And again, notice what aspects the Nevi'im Achronim concentrate on when they project the issue of Shabbat and they understand it. Okay?